Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew, a New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, alongside Cody Frankel and Avery Zaretsky. We're going to have an interview with Don LaGreca a little bit later in today's episode. But before we do that, the Rangers just had their 10-game win streak snapped in Columbus. We're recording right now, right after the game. The interview with Don is going to be Monday afternoon, so we'll have this episode out mid-afternoon Monday, Monday night, that kind of time frame. So just to keep everyone in perspective of when we're recording, this is right after the Columbus game. You know, it sucks. It's a bummer the way they lost that game. You can't really be too upset about it, I feel like. But what do you guys think? I know, Avery, you were watching with Alex and AJ. So what were the vibes over there in Miami?
It was all right. I mean, obviously no one wants to lose, but it is what it is. You win 10 games.
At least they tried.
I mean, they didn't really try.
We were kind of saying that that's what you were going to say, though, before you hopped on.
No, I didn't think they played a great game at all, but also it's like, you know, the Rangers could go on spans where they win four games, they lose one, they win three games, they lose one. Like, for them to go 10 straight games with wins, like, can't really ask for much better than that. And it's like they were bound to lose a game, like they weren't going to go the rest of the season and just keep winning. So it obviously sucks that it was tonight.
Just so fucking typical that they have a chance to like set a franchise record in Columbus and they lay an egg.
Yeah, but you saw Lobby talking about it. Like, they don't really care about that. They have one.
No, but we care.
I don't care. I care.
You don't care. I care.
Dude, what are we gonna like go tell our kids like, oh, we saw like a franchise record? Like, no, we want the Stanley Cup. Like, you think
I would still tell my kids that.
Because you're weird, like, dude. So, you're like a participation trophy type.
Avery, for fans like TBL the dude, where do they go from here?
Oh, dude, I don't. that guy's weird. But no, I think it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm getting slapped around by Columbus girl right now.
Yeah, your enemy.
Yeah, my frenemy. She's really just she's. She told me to leave her alone and then tweeted at me 11 times since.
Yeah, did she tweet anything at you? I want to see it.
Yeah, like five things, dude. She's tweeting like memes at me and shit.
Right now?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's something else. But listen, these games happen. They didn't play well at all. I thought top to bottom, they played pretty poorly until the last 2 minutes and 30 seconds of the game, and literally 2 minutes of that, they had a power play.
Playing a 6-on-4. Yeah. It's not good.
So, you know, I think, listen, Quick hasn't played in how long? 10 days?
He hasn't played since the Montreal game, which was
last 10 days.
Yeah, last Thursday.
So it's been a while for him. And
even before that, it was like,
yeah,
Tampa game.
Yeah, and I'm not making excuses. I mean, you know, they lost. They didn't play well at all. I thought Keandre Miller had an absolutely horrible game. But, you know, not to just point out him, but, yeah, they just got to kind of burn the tape there and move on. And we have Columbus again on Wednesday, so let's kick their ass. And Columbus girl, I'm coming for you.
Avery, looked like you had something to say.
Are we home against Columbus?
Yeah, Wednesday night.
Yeah. The schedule's so stupid.
But after that game, and not to overlook Columbus, like the Rangers schedule in March is pretty fucking loaded. I'll read through it, but it starts Saturday. They're in Toronto, then home against Florida, home against St. Louis, home against New Jersey, on the road in Carolina, on the road in Tampa, on the road in Pittsburgh, home against the Islanders, home against Winnipeg, in Boston, home against Florida, home against Philly, in Colorado, in Arizona. Like, there aren't really many easy games on that schedule. Like, it's going to be a fucking grind in March.
I know Columbus is, like, bad, but our biggest weakness as a team is that we're just not good on the rush. Like, we're not.
Yeah, and they were saying on the broadcast all night.
They're really fast, and they're really good on the rush. So, it's just like they played exactly into our weakness.
Yeah, I mean, they rushed us like seven different times. And
I think they scored three of their four goals on the rush.
Yeah. The Roslovic goal was
nasty.
Sick.
First one was like, what was the first one?
I don't know. It's all.
I know the second one was like that.
I know play the last two were on the rush.
Marchenko was that one where he danced around Quick after like a really bad end zone at the start of the second.
First goal was a snipe, dude.
Third goal off the rush, fourth goal off the rush. What was the first? I can't think of the first goal.
It was a snipe from the corner. From the corner,
Oh, Voronkov, but I can't remember the goal. Was it a power play goal? I don't know. Just
want to take a quick pause and talk about a great new sponsor that we have. I love betting, my friends, and betting them on anything. Sporting games, who's fast, that's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo. So use our code BELIEVERANGERS, capital Believe, and then a capital R in Rangers for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code. That's BELIEVERANGERS, capital Believe, B-L-E-A-V, capital R in Rangers, and Cut will put your money where your mouth is.
Either way, yeah, just, you know, ugly game, but I wanted to get into Matt Rempe just right away. Well, obviously, he's the only fucking thing that really we could talk about from that game. What else really happened? But
yeah,
what do you guys make of just his last week? Obviously, it's been super exciting. I mean, people, I tweeted as a joke, but other people have been saying it too, that Rempe right now is like the Lynn Sanity.
Yeah.
You know, just comes in randomly and like becomes this big storyline. And I'm not sure it's going to continue. But
yeah.
What do you guys make of this whole week with Matt Rempe?
I think, you know, listen, I love that he's trying to change the tempo. I love he's trying to get the guys jolted, and you know, he's being the enforcer that this team needs, right? Like, I don't think you need to start a fight every game or say yes to a fight every game. I think you're gonna learn real quick that there's certain guys you don't mess with, regardless of how big you are. I think he kind of learned that tonight. But you know, I love what he's doing for the team. I love the energy he's bringing. And I think tonight he's going to use as a learning lesson. And I'm sure Laviolette's probably actually going to talk to him tonight and, you know, let him know, like, we appreciate your energy. We love what you're doing, but like, you know, don't feel the need to like go to battle in terms of fights every single night for these guys. Like I think just being physical and keeping guys out, you know, like crashing the net when you're on the ice and things like that, and just being physical with other players, I think that shows just as much enforcer-like as it does like ringing the bell with guys.
Yeah, I think Rempe's been awesome. I agree. You definitely don't have to fight every game. You shouldn't have to feel the need to do it, but maybe he wants to. Maybe that's just the persona he's building. Like, he knows like he's not there to be the offensive production guy. I mean, he scored in Philly, which was awesome. And you know, he is I wouldn't say he's like a super skilled player, but he is skilled. His speed is actually surprisingly pretty good.
What the hell are you saying?
I'm saying like he's fast for his height. Like he
bro,
does
fastest have, skater in the league.
Like he does have some skill. Like he's not just like a complete plug. I think he still adds like a little bit of something there. Like
I wouldn't say he's
fourth line grinder. Skill.
Yeah,
fourth line grinder.
Skill is a stretch. I'm trying to find. I thought I saw a stat.
Stop shitting on my boy Avery, Johnny. Okay.
I just think he's not. I'm just like trying to say like he's not like a plug.
He's
like,
more he's than just a fighter. Yeah.
He's not just useless out there.
He's not real.
I know you're saying.
Yes, he's not. Yeah.
Like we can use him in terms of like we don't need him to fight and then play with 11 forwards to start the game. Like he's an impactful player out there.
No, I agree. In a couple games, he'll probably be on PP1. But
F you. Cody,
no, I agree. I agree with what you're saying. He's not just a dummy there to fight people. Like, again, I think he's bringing an edge to this team that this team needs. But I think taking the approach where like I'd like to see him lay some big hits and stuff. I don't think he needs to, you know, ring the bell every night. But
yeah, I agree.
I thought I saw a stat of him like in junior where he only had like here. I've been trying to find that for like the last 5 minutes. He had 16 fights in the AHL. What?
Focus up on the pod, buddy.
He had 16 fights in the AHL, I think, in his career. He's already got what, 4 fights in 5 games?
Three. Yeah. But
feels like more.
He didn't fight Bastion.
Bastion?
Bastion. I like saying it like no, the
he
guy
fought Siegenthaler. He fucking popped Siegenthaler right after that hit.
I don't think they've
Yeah,
it wasn't really. Did they register it as a fight?
That was definitely a fight. He literally punched Siegenthaler straight in the face, knocked his ass down.
I know, but it was like
definitely a fight. That was definitely
all right. Anyways, so there's 3 games left, boys, before the deadline, right?
That's
it. We have a game. Yeah, that's it. Because we have a game Wednesday.
When's
we have a game.
Deadline?
March 8th. It's a week
next
from Friday.
Next Friday. But we have a game on Wednesday against Columbus.
Three games. Yeah, three games. You said?
Yeah, yeah. And then we play the Leafs on Saturday, the Panthers on Monday, and then we're off until Saturday. So the deadline will have passed. So my guess is after that game against the Panthers on Monday, Chris Drury is going to be a very busy guy the next 3-4 days. You know, Johnny texted our group chat earlier today about Brady Tkachuk. And
I did. I did.
Avery texted our group chat.
We did like a little bit of a Q&A on Twitter the other night. He was just answering questions, and he was saying, like, rumor boys, they heard that Brady Tkachuk might be on the move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there any legitimacy to that? I'm not, like, saying that, you know, Witt isn't tapped in, but, like, you know, are we really going
to sit here and say? To be fair, like, a lot of the insiders, like, how much, you know, the NHL insiders aren't like Woj and Shams in terms of like, they just like, they don't really put that much stuff out there. So like it could be very legitimate. I know that they're close with the Tkachuks and they're also tapped into a lot of the teams in the NHL. So I wouldn't put it past him.
The only insider who actually put shit out there is Friedman. That's it.
Like, and I like, we had him on the show, Pagnotta.
Yeah, Frank Saravalli does too. Frank does also on his show.
Frank does too. But if it's
a lot of them do it on their shows and not on Twitter. So you got to listen to their podcast to hear where they talk about that stuff. Yeah. It's not like they're tweeting like all the time, like hearing this guy is going here. They just talk about on their show when a team comes up and players come up, they elaborate on what they're hearing on those players.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, I don't want to derail too much. I guess my question to you guys is, you know, Rempe's obviously up now. Edstrom's up. Like, what does this team need besides a 3C? Do you still think they need a winger going? Like, because if they
1,000%,
yeah, you think so?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, okay. I think that you saw that.
Barkley will get the boot.
You saw that tonight too, with the way that Laviolette was moving around the lines. Like, he just wanted to see how guys look in different scenarios. I don't know if that's like a Chris Drury thing. Like, did he want to see Panarin up at the top and like told?
No, Lavi, I mean, they had no jump in the second period. I think that's what it was. Like, they came out in the second period and they were so fucking flat. Like, he had to do something to change it.
I know, but you go 10 games with the same lines. Like,
when your team is that flat, dude, like the first 3 minutes of the second period, they were hemmed in their own zone. You just got to do something.
Bro, if Aaron Judge goes 0 for 27, do you bench him?
I don't
know.
The answer is no.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like,
but what if the whole team? What if the whole team?
Decided to ask the most random thing, and just because whenever I ask something random, that's like over Johnny's head because he can't think that hard.
Well, I just don't know baseball like that. That's like what going over 27 is like what nine games.
No, proud of you, dude.
And also, like 8 games. Emily Kaplan was talking on the broadcast of the Flyers game about how Gabe Perreault and Hoffman.
Well, let's go back into the Tkachuk thing now, or just
what I'm saying. Like, in terms of like what the Rangers would do at the deadline, the way Emily Kaplan's talking, they're not willing to move with their two biggest pieces. So it would either have to be a roster player and a ton of picks, or they're just not. I don't. Maybe the Rangers
are not going to take a big swing. Brady Tkachuk if you're not moving.
Exactly. Brown. So I don't even know if the Rangers are going to take a big swing if they're just hanging up the phone on their two biggest prospects. I know they have to, but
do they need do they need that big of a swing? Like, a 3C to me isn't a big swing. Like, trading for Yanni Gourde,
I'm talking about a first line winger. Like, they need that.
Yeah, but like, who's available, dude?
Who's a prospect they would get rid of right now? Would probably be Brett Berard, who's kind of lighting it up in the AHL.
Or Garand, or
Berard, I would imagine, would be one of the prospects to go. I don't think they're, you know, like Emily said, I don't think they're going to move Hoffman. If they do move Perreault, I would have a shit fit. I think every Ranger fan would, with what he's done in college this year. Uh-huh. Like, Gabe Perreault, if they ever move, like, I'm all for going all in on the Stanley Cup, but with this kid, I don't know. To me, he's untouchable. Like, I don't care who they bring in. Gabe Perreault, for me.
Connor McDavid?
Well, you know, like, really.
Johnny wouldn't trade Gabe Perreault for Connor McDavid. Yo, put it out there in the universe, boys.
Just to me, like, you look at a guy like Gabe Perreault, like, Mika's what? Is he 31 years old? How old's Mika?
Mika's like 31, yeah. Maybe.
Regardless. Keep going.
I just think that's a guy who's going to be your number one center for 30. As long as you need him to be. And,
yeah, I mean, he's a
you know,
the guy's
he's a playmaker, he's a gamer, he's done it at every level. Like, he is arguably the best prospect the Rangers have had maybe since I've been alive, you know.
Okay, okay, so let me ask you this.
He gets 30, by the way.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
So Gabe Perreault, untouchable. Fine. We all agree.
Yep.
If Brady Tkachuk or Jake Gensel, who we're obviously not going to get because Pittsburgh hates us, like, is there anybody other than those two guys whose name you've heard that you're giving up Brendan Hoffman for, honestly?
I would give up Hoffman for Vetrano.
I would.
Why?
You're crazy.
That's really bad. I would never.
Not a one for one. That's
crazy, dude.
Not a one for one, but like I think Hoffman, as much as I do like Hoffman, if we're talking about going all in right now, then Vetrano is a piece that's needed.
Dude, no? I love you, bro, but you can literally get Vetrano with so much less. And I know he's having a career year, and I know he's under term. Bro, you can get Vetrano with like your first Zach Jones and like one other prospect, and that gets you Vetrano. You don't need to give up Brendan. 100%, dude. 100. You're talking to the trade wizard over here. You do not need to trade Brendan Hoffman for Frank fucking Vetrano. And I love Vetrano.
Yeah, like, dude, like if I'm talking about Hoffman, I'm thinking like
I'm thinking big hitters,
like,
dude.
Hoffman in like a first and maybe in a second for Gensel. Like, I'm not.
Yeah. What was the initial question?
Yeah, it was besides Gensel and Brady Tkachuk, is there anybody out there whose name you've heard that you would give up for? Which you answered. Vetrano, which is fine. You're entitled to your opinion. I think you're crazy, but see, Booch,
I'm still Vetrano over Buchnevich.
Insane. That's insane.
You're wild, dude. Can I just say something? Vetrano's on pace for 60 points this year. Before this year, he's never had over 45 points. Like that, I'm just going to put that out there. Booch has had 280-point seasons, bro. You're crazy.
I think Vetrano's a great player. I would love to have him back in a heartbeat. But, like, we're talking about, like, two completely different players here.
I know, and I just don't think that Buchnevich is a playoff guy. I don't see it in him. I don't. And we've seen Vetrano be successful in the playoffs here on that top line. Like, he's got speed. He can bang bodies. He's a shoot-first guy. He scores goals, and I think he
scores goals. Pavel Buchnevich has 22 goals right now. Buddy.
I know, but I'm saying in the playoffs, like, Frank Vetrano came here for a playoff run, and to me, he proved himself. Like, I haven't seen, like, let me even just look up Buchnevich's playoff stats.
But I will say, like, we agree with you. We want Vetrano back. I think Vetrano will be great for this team. I just don't think you need to give up Brendan Hoffman for that. And I think crazy.
It was a hypothetical question. Who's the one name out there that you would give up Hoffman for? So I answered the question and said Frank Vetrano. Okay. Buchnevich had one goal in 12 playoff games with the Blues in 21-22. He had 11 points, 10 assists, one goal in 12 games, minus three. Before that, played three games in the bubble with the Rangers, 0 points, and then 16-17.
So he had 11 points in 12 games, and you're saying he's not a performer?
Frank Vetrano has one more point. Oh, no, wait, no, I'm looking at
I'm just saying in that run, like, Frank was a perfect fit.
Sure, he was a perfect fit. Listen, nobody's disagreeing with you. Frankie is the man. But I don't know. I don't think there's another – I mean, maybe Hanifin, if it's like, you know,
for Alvin.
Yeah, dude, Hanifin's insane. Hanifin's like 27 years old, and he would be on your top four for the next 10 years.
Dude,
Hanifin, they're talking about him commanding two firsts, bro.
Okay, yeah, I read that wrong. So, yeah, Booch was almost a point-a-game player on that Blues run in 21-22. Vetrano's played 14 more games and has not that many more points than Booch. But, yeah, I mean, I just think it would be clear-cut. I would rather have Booch back on that top line than Vetrano. Even though, like I said, I would take Vetrano back in a heartbeat. Like, if it was
– I don't think there's any wrong answer. It's just
– No.
Yeah, no. Preference.
They just need an upgrade there. Without a doubt.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, listen, also, like, I want to step back a second and say, like, is there anyone really worth, like, is there really one piece you think that really sets this team over the edge? You know what I'm saying? Like,
right now?
Bringing in one guy, I don't think change. I think you need, like, maybe two or three.
I mean, I think bringing in Brady Tkachuk or Jake Gensel will change this team.
Brady Tkachuk, but there's no, and
that's what I was saying to you last week. Like, there's this is a really weird year because there's no superstars available.
Like I don't think anyone's doing, you know, back just like Berard or Hoffman or any prospect. Like, there's no like one for one, I think, that's gonna really separate.
No, probably not. Yeah. Probably not. Like, every team needs to make, like, you know, we could trade for Vetrano and we still need to make one more move.
Like if you had Hoffman in a package with, let's say, Berard.
Jones
for like Henrique and Vetrano. I don't know.
Henrique Lundqvist.
Yeah, I fucking hate this time of year. It's all just like hypothetical.
I know. It's just like one of those things. It's like, dude, and I will fight to the death for Mika. Like, I love Mika Zibanejad, but he's got 5 even strength goals, bro. Like, we need someone to get him going because, like, and Mika March is coming up. We know it's always a big month for him, so hopefully he turns it around. But like, needs to be someone on that line. There needs to be like, listen, you're not going to go out and get a Panarin type passer, but like, you need someone who like can get Mika the puck in the spot for him to score.
So
I still don't think he's playing as bad as people are making it seem to be. He's still
not 5 even strength goals for a number one center is not good.
Dude, he's not playing. Have you guys seen
his points?
No, he's playing well in areas of the ice. He's just not scoring goals and he doesn't have that shoot mentality. Every time, and I'm starting to like count it honestly, every time he has a 2-on-1 with Chris Kreider, I can't remember the last time he actually shot. Even that goal against the Devils the other night. Like, that puck comes to him in the slot, and he's looking backdoor for Kreider, and then the puck ends up on his stick for the rebound. But, like, when is that going to click in to just shoot the fucking puck?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know.
That was a power play, so it's not Avery.
I don't know what's going on with him. He just, you know. Okay, so sorry. I'm going to ask one more question. Hypothetical, okay? Yeah. Is there any trades Drury can make that would leave you disappointed at the deadline? And be like, damn, that sucks. Or
if he traded Gabe Perreault for like someone not worth it.
No, I meant like, all right, if at the deadline he trades for like Greenway and like Anthony Duclair.
I wouldn't be disappointed. I wouldn't.
That's your deadline.
So here's my thing about the trade deadline. I never like jumped at like Drury or anything. Like, it's all about waiting. Like, yeah, I'd be disappointed if they didn't get like a top line winger, but like whoever they get, like, I'm not going to jump on them right away. Like, I'll give them time to figure it out and hopefully they work out for the Rangers. Like, I'm not just going to be like, oh, why would we do this? Why would we do that? It's like, you just got to let them play. Like, there's guys you're going to get and you don't know what's going to happen. Like, they could click, they could find chemistry. They could be a lot better than they were on the team that they were on before. So you can never really just jump at a guy until you actually see how they play.
If they get rid of Kako for a rental, I'd be pretty disappointed.
Okay. Yeah, that's another one too.
That's the answer I was looking for.
Yeah. I'd be pretty disappointed just because right now Kako is probably a cheaper third liner that, like, you know, let's face it, right now he is that third line guy that is, you know, critical to a team that wins. Again, you know, if you want to throw in Kako for a guy that comes with like another year of a contract that is a little bit more offensive and has more offensive upside, I'd be a little bit more for it. But for a rental, the rental thing, I'm not really for right now.
I gotta be honest. I'm over trading for the rentals. We do it every year and it doesn't pan out. Like, that's why I'm so for Vetrano this year, because it's like
one more
trade for a guy with one more year of term. And like, you know, at least if we somehow don't make it to the end, which, you know, this is our year and all, but then we have him the following year.
I agree. But that's the one thing I think I'd be disappointed. At least that's like been talked about.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably that it would be like that and like trading Gabe Perreault. Other than that,
I don't think Gabe Perreault. I mean, Gabe Perreault often. That's all hypothetical. Like,
can I tell you what mine would be?
What
if they traded away Cooley?
Oh yeah, is that even being talked about,
dude?
I don't think they would do that.
Why not?
Yeah, Will Cooley is a fucking treasure. I don't think they're doing that.
If a team says, if the one obstacle for a big player is like, hey, we want Perreault or Cooley, like, who do you think they're going with?
What do you mean? You think they're going to – wait, say it again?
I'm saying, like, if a team, if they're in deep negotiations with a team and the team is like, we want a premier prospect, and that's either Perreault or Cooley, let's just say.
Well, Cooley's not a prospect. He's a full-time
NHL player. He's still considered a prospect.
No, he's not. He's a full-blown NHL player.
Bro, okay.
He's played every game this year.
I know that.
Does that make him a prospect?
He's just a young player.
He's still considered a young player.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think that, like, if it was like they're trading for Booch and they're arguing like, should we trade Cooley or not? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would do it.
All right, Avery's sick.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Cooley, I don't know. I don't.
You know what I'm saying? Just putting the thoughts out there, but not. Honestly, realistically, what's going to happen is they're going to trade for like two guys who were just like, they're going to trade for like Nick Dowd, and we're going to be like, all right, sick. But all right, anything else, boys?
No, we got I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of this with Don LaGreca. We haven't actually recorded with him yet, so you know, we'll talk about that. But all this hypothetical talk, like, I just can't wait for it to be March 9th. Like, I really
Donnie
just
says
know.
This every single year.
I know, because it's so fucking annoying. Like, every week leading up to the deadline, it's all these conversations, and like, people get heated, people like. You know, it's just all hypothetical and so annoying every year.
He's sick of being bullied on Twitter for another 9 days.
I hate it. But yeah, you guys have any final thoughts before I go to Don?
No.
All right, let's kick it over to Don LaGreca. Hope you guys enjoy it.
This week on the Blue Crew, we are very honored to welcome on someone I've actually gotten to know now over the past couple of weeks being at Ranger Games, someone I've listened to my entire life, the co-host of the Michael Kay Show. He hosts his NHL podcast called Game Misconduct, and you always hear him on the Rangers Radio Network airwaves on ESPN 98.7. Welcome to the show, our new friend, Don LaGreca. Don.
Oh, it's my pleasure. If people knew how much work we've put into getting this together, they really – I think appreciate and look forward to these this time together, because we've been trying to do this for a while. Our schedules are busy, but I'm glad we're able to get it together.
A lot of chatter at games about when you're finally going to come on. But I actually, you know, as you know, you prepare for a lot of interviews. We prepare for a lot of interviews. Sometimes things happen where you kind of have to go off the rails a little bit with the way you started. So something happened. And I don't mean to put you on the hot seat here, Don, but about 20 minutes ago, I got a friend request on Facebook from you.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here and I'm like, I listened to Don LaGreca's rants on the airwaves now for probably 20 years of my life. If he's doing rants on Facebook, I don't think I can accept his friend request. Are you one of those Facebook guys that go on and just rant?
No. Matter of fact, my Facebook, I would get rid of it if I didn't have a bunch of pictures stored in it. But I just recently needed to get something and I downloaded it on my phone. And now I'm getting all these messages. So I saw your message. Also, Leah Hextall from ESPN friended me. So I'm like, so I hit a bunch of these but I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook. I'd get rid of it. So I don't expect any real content from me on Facebook.
I was just wondering if you transcribe all your radio rants into writing and put it on Facebook. I don't
know. No, nothing like that at all. My rants are just for radio or what Yes picks up. And then that's it. So. I usually regret them right after they're over. I kind of want to have those old school blackouts that I get, but no, there won't be anything on Facebook. Don't worry about it.
I'll confirm this request live then as we're recording.
Yes, there you go. Now
we're officially Facebook friends.
Excellent.
I love that. Don, you pretty much answered one of my first questions for you. For those who don't know, you're probably, if not the biggest or one of the biggest animated broadcasters in New York, if not in the country. With that being said, would you feel like what's your breaking point with fans? Like when you really just get set over the edge, because we've seen it all. It's really funny and I love to watch it.
It's usually just like stupidity, like a dumb question or just somebody that's trying to get my goat. And I think I've gotten good enough at it to realize when somebody's kind of just faking it to try to get me upset. But, you know, sometimes it depends on my mood that day. You know, was there traffic going to work? I might be on edge. But most of the time, it's just a caller will set me off with something just really stupid. And then I just get going, or maybe Michael's got me in a bad mood and I kind of go off there. There are times where I'll be ranting about a subject, but my anger really is coming from someplace else. You know, so it's good. I'm sure a therapist would have some fun with that, trying to find out why sometimes I'm the way that I am with my rants. But most of the time they're not fake, because if they were fake, I'd do them more often because they do get a positive reaction. But sometimes it just does come from what headspace am I in on that given day? And that's how animated I end up being. But usually it's a caller just saying something stupid or a dumb point that just drives me up a wall.
Are there people who say it's fake? Because there's no way.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way there's people with that much passion who could fake that. I mean, they're genuine.
Whenever I have a rant and it'll go viral or ESPN will put it up or Yes will put it up, I'll read the comments and somebody inevitably will say, oh, it's just fake. He's an actor. He's just trying to get clicks. And like I said, if I was acting, I would do it a lot more often than I do. I mean, sometimes I'll go a whole year without losing it. Sometimes I'll lose it 2-3 days in a row. But believe me, if it was an act, I think I'd be doing a disservice to the station if I didn't do it more often than I do based on the reaction it seems to get.
Is there anything right now regarding the Rangers that has gotten you riled up as of late? I know things have been good here. We won 10 in a row. I know that was snapped last night. But, you know, the conversations are starting to pick up around the trade deadline. Is there something, you know, that you've been hearing lately that maybe frustrates you or something you want to address?
No, I mean, right now it's been fun. I mean, last night was really frustrating. I had to call with Dave Maloney. And I guess if there's anything that maybe needs to be addressed in the immediate is the Matt Rempe situation. Yeah. Because clearly, and you saw, I thought MSG had great footage of the conversation with Olivier before the game. I mean, he's going to be challenged every night. And he's got to learn to say no. And I know when you're a young kid and you're being challenged by veterans like DeLaurier, like Martin, like Olivier, you feel obligated to oblige. But I don't know how it benefited them last night. I mean, he had fought a huge fight with DeLaurier the day before. But you could see he still has bloody knuckles from that fight. So he's clearly at a disadvantage. Olivier didn't scrap, I believe, against Buffalo on Friday. You know, so you got to realize, hey, we're playing on Wednesday. If you want to go at me, then let's do it on Wednesday when I've got a few days off. And I really do think it affected the Rangers because he didn't do well in that fight. And then the Rangers give up an early goal and Columbus ended up being the better team. Now, maybe that would have happened anyway. And based on how they played against Columbus this year, there's a sneaking suspicion it would have ended up that way anyway. But I think whether he or somebody within the organization is going to manage this, he can't. It's not healthy for him to go out there and fight every night. He's a good player. He's a nice fourth line player. You saw, even though he didn't score that goal by Enstrom, he certainly affected that goal for sure. He's a nice player. But we've seen, unfortunately, in this league, guys that fight a lot, it's not healthy. It's not good. So I hope this isn't going to be a daily event. And I hope that in these warmups, when he's getting challenged, that he can just say, listen, not tonight. And I think last night would have been a good spot for him to say, listen, you want to go at it, let's go at it on Wednesday, but I'm good tonight.
Well, I saw that also, and I posted the clip of Olivier skating over to him in the red line, but did you see the post-game quotes that came from Olivier after, where he said that Rempe actually challenged him?
Yeah. I didn't see that. I was, I did the game. I didn't get a chance. So, I mean, if that's then he has to manage that. He's got, listen, no, we got to stop. I mean, we all knew that Olivier was the one guy that could fight him. And there's not a lot of teams that have a guy like that. So it's not like it's going to have to be every single night, but that has to be managed. I think, you know, whether Peter has a conversation with him, like, it's great. He's become a folk hero, but they've got bigger fish to fry here. And I think he's an important player. The goon, the enforcer's role is starting to leave this sport, but that fourth line's contributing. I think that's more important than anything else. If he's asked to answer the bell, answer it. But, you know, that's probably not the ideal thing for him to do, is be, you know, fighting 2-3 times a week. I just think it's going to – and I worry about his health. I mean, we've seen, unfortunately, these enforcers have really the struggle in life later on. It's not an ideal situation for him. So hopefully he learns to manage that.
I mean, you know, they're having a rematch on Wednesday night after he lost.
Listen, great for him. He's had a few days off because they're not playing again until Wednesday, and then they don't play again until Saturday. I don't know if you take a look at the Rangers' schedule. It's weird. They play 4 times in 2 weeks. It's crazy. Yeah. But does it benefit the Rangers? They're a better team than Columbus. Sometimes it's just about going out there and being the better team. I think it benefits the Blue Jackets more than it does the Rangers, because it just fires up a team that's just kind of waiting to get to the finish line, where the Rangers are actually battling for first place. I still think Carolina could put pressure on them. They've got the games in hand, and they've got a lot of meetings together between now and the end of the season. So I think it's important to win this division. I think it's important to finish strong. So those are the things I think they need to focus on more than what's going on with Rempe and his fights almost every night.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think he'd want to save the fight for MSG, if anything.
I just think he's fired up. I mean, he's a kid. He's excited. And you're going to get he's going to get a great ovation in the game coming up on Wednesday, because the game against the Devils was at the Rock. A lot of Ranger fans were there, but it was technically, a road game, and the game in Philadelphia was on the road. So I think he's going to get a tremendous response, and I'm not going to put it at the level of Linsanity, but it does have a DeVito kind of feel to it with the Giants. Right. So, this team's competing for a Stanley Cup, and I think he can be a major piece to that. Honestly, the way that fourth line is playing right now with Enstrom and Gaudreau. So I think that's got to be the focus moving forward.
100%. Going back to your broadcasting career, just going away from this Rempe situation a little bit. I did hear that you were a Devils fan growing up. Is that true?
Yes, I was a Devil fan. My first game was February 22nd, 1987. My girlfriend, now wife, was a season ticket holder when they made their run to the conference final in 88. My dad wasn't a big hockey fan. I remember watching the 79 Stanley Cup final with him. And I remember wanting to go to the Garden, wanting to see Ranger games. My dad was not a big fan of going into the city. And like I said, he didn't grow up a hockey fan. He kind of just parachuted in when it was like a big deal. And I remember him telling me in like 82, he's like, a hockey team's coming to New Jersey. So maybe once they come, we'll go to New Jersey. We'll support the team. And we started to follow it. They were awful. But then when I got my driver's license, I started going to the Meadowlands and following them. And the first game, February 22nd, 1987, they lost to the Islanders 6-0. A puck went off of Claude Loisel's head into the net. It was just a really ugly game, but I fell in love with the sport through them. And I was a fan of theirs, obviously, until my career got cooking and I got the Ranger opportunity. And I've learned to move on from that.
Most important question here. Did you know about the season tickets prior to making her your girlfriend, or was that
something? No, it happened while we were together. That's not why I started dating her, but I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember, but that was a big deal. They beat the Islanders in the first round, beat the Capitals in the second round, took Boston to 7 games. That was, Sean Burke was incredible coming out of the Olympics in 88 to join the Devils late. And they went on a 10-1-1 run the final 12 games of the season to beat out the Penguins and the Rangers on that last day. I remember, the Devils had to beat the Blackhawks in overtime, and they beat Darren Pang. Earlier, the Rangers beat the Nordiques, and I believe Pittsburgh was taking on Hartford. And so the Devils had to win that game in order to make the playoffs. And I was just hooked. That really got me completely hooked into hockey. I was a football, baseball guy at that point, and then from then on, I just became a hockey guy.
I was only asking that because I always wonder, how could a Devils fan possibly root for the Rangers and have so much passion as you? Because I always say that from top to bottom, TV and radio, the Rangers have the best crew by far between Sam, Joe, you, Kenny, and Dave. I've always said that by far, maybe the best in sports because of how much passion you guys all have. And I was just thinking, if he's a Devils fan, how could he possibly get over that? And, how could he possibly be have a emphatic Panarin call as a Devils fan?
I love what I do, and this is a dream come true to call hockey games. It really is. So it was an easy transition for me. I get the opportunity to call Ranger games. I was doing the pre and post at the coming out of the lockout in 2005-06, and then in 2008 I was given the opportunity to back up Kenny. The first game I did was in October of 2008 against the Flyers in Philly. I just loved it so much. I was so passionate about doing hockey. I did NHL Live. I just love the sport. And to be able to be that close to it, to travel with the team and to call games all over the National Hockey League is just amazing. And it came to a head in 2012 when they played in the conference final. And I got a chance to call a game there. And then game 6, I was at ice level on the side where Henrik scored. And I remember a lot of Devil fans were getting on me why I didn't have a reaction when Henrik scored. Like they expect me to bang on the glass. I'm working for MSG, for God's sakes. What do you expect me to do?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this unfold, And I wasn't happy. And the reason I wasn't happy was that the Rangers season was over. And I just loved doing games. And, you know, listen, I had no connection to the Devils at that point. I mean, I went to the Stanley Cup final because I had a credential and I was able to go to those games against the Kings when they were home. But it was over. My season was over. The Rangers weren't going to win. And I was like, that it was pretty easy for me where my heart was. And then 2 years later, they go to the Stanley Cup final and Doc Emmerich's father-in-law passes away. So Kenny was called to call the game for NBC. And I got to call game one of the Stanley Cup final on radio against the Kings in LA. And it was amazing. So no, it's, we all start, I don't want to, I guess it's apples and oranges, but you know, you're a player. Let's say you're a player and you grow up a Maple Leaf fan or a Ranger fan or whatever, and you get drafted by another team. And it's kind of like, I felt like I was drafted by the Rangers. So it was an easy transition. So I root for all three teams, honestly, because from a Michael Kaye perspective, if all three teams are in the playoffs, there's more hockey to talk. But you know, my heart right now is, and my career is based on what the Rangers are able to accomplish.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a perfect way to put it. And I think it's obviously something that most people can, well, I guess not most people, but a lot of people can relate to in that sense. But, you know, something I really wanted to pick your brain about, and Avery and I, you know, just for a little bit more background, we're post 94 babies. So we weren't alive to see the Cup. We haven't seen, or I haven't seen shit in my lifetime. I'm a big Rangers and Knicks fan. I don't really root for, I mean, I'm a Giants Mets fan, I guess, but I don't really follow those sports very closely. But in regards to this trade deadline, I'm sure you're asked all the time what player you want, blah, 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 all that crap, which is all hypothetical. I want to ask you if this feels like 30 years ago where Neil Smith is handed his cards and he has to sacrifice a ton of young talent to go after the Cup now. I think something that you're passionate about that we've talked about is that in this city, I think there are fans who are a little impatient, but there are also fans who are a little too patient with players, with prospects and all that. And a lot of fans, including us, don't want to see a lot of the younger talent go. But do you think that's a possibility if this team really is going to have to go all in? Because the Eastern Conference, is wide open right now, as wide open as it's been in the past few years. The Rangers are even running for the President's Trophy. And there are fans who are sitting here saying they wouldn't give up an Othman or wouldn't give up a Kako when 30 years ago, they had to give up Doug Waite. They had to give up Mike Gartner. They had to give up Tony Amonte, and it got them a Cup. But I think there's still a little bit of fear in that. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, there's a bunch of things here. First of all, the Rangers were going 54 years without a Cup. They were an older veteran team. They had some young players, obviously, Alexei Kovalev. You know, Leach was still on the younger side, Richter. But, you know, they went, got Messier for one reason and one reason only, and that was to win a Cup. And I think it was a lot easier to win back then. There were fewer teams. You know, you look at the run the Rangers went on. I mean, they're clearly the best team in the NHL. I mean, they smoked the Islanders. Islanders didn't belong on the same ice with the Rangers. Ron Hextall was their goaltender. Same thing with the Washington Capitals. But the Devils, you know, obviously the Devils were growing into something there. And then they caught the break with Vancouver. Vancouver was just on a miracle run. And it still took seven games to be able to win it. But you take a look at what happened to Boston last year. You know, first place, coast to coast, breaking records in the regular season, get bounced in the first round. I just think it's so hard to win that you have to kind of think about the long-term thing. And being all in and trading everybody for now can turn out to be a mistake. Yeah, if you win, great, like the Rangers did in 94. But you take a look at how things went after 94. They missed a lot of those good young guys. They got older, and they went to the conference final in 97, and then they went on a long run of not making the playoffs. You know, until we came out of the lockout, it was 8 years counting the lockout, missing the playoffs. It clearly cost them. I don't think Chris Drury wants to do that. I think the plan is to have something that's sustainable for a long period of time. And that doesn't mean that he's not going to go for something that looks like can really help them. But I think they've cultivated these draft picks and they want to try to make it work. So I would be surprised if they went all in like Keenan and Smith did in 94. Plus, they were able to do that, guys, because there was no cap. I mean, they were able to add all of these pieces, just one after another, to be able to bring in, you know, McTavish and to be able to bring in Anderson. And it was almost overkill at that point because they didn't have to worry about a salary cap. But now certainly the salary cap is on his mind. And I think they will make a deal, whether it's a center, whether it's a right winger, depth on the blue line. But I don't think it's going to come at the expense of like 94 level of really trading, you know, big time prospects and real young players that, that would affect the long term health of this franchise.
Is there a name out there that you would expect them to go after?
There's so many.
I tried to avoid this, Avery.
I know. And we get this question all the time on the podcast too. But if there's somebody out there like a Buchnevich that we've seen play for the Rangers before, or Vetrano, that you would see as a great fit for the Rangers?
Well, Vetrano makes sense.
The Buchnevich agenda.
No, listen, I like Buchnevich as well, and I understood why they had to do what they had to do. But it was a tough give up because of, you know, cap restraints. Vetrano makes a lot of sense because of his contribution a couple of years ago to the conference final run. So he checks all the boxes. He's been here, plays the right position. You know, Vetrano and Kopp were huge in that run a couple of years ago. So they're going to be asked to do a lot. I love Roslovic. You saw him yesterday. I don't know why Columbus would ever part with him, but, you know, that looks like a player. You like Adam Henrique. He's used to the market, can play, you know, center, a little wing. You know, he's scored big goals in the postseason, much to the chagrin of the Rangers. But, you know, that seems like a really nice player, too. God, I love a Yanni Gourde. I don't know if Seattle would do it. They're still alive for the playoffs out west. But, God, I just think that anybody that makes the playoffs at the back end on the Western Conference is going to get pulverized by how good, how top-heavy the West is. So those are the names that kind of pop to me. We'll see if anybody else kind of gets going. I wonder, with the emergence of Rempe and Enstrom, whether there's less of an appetite because of this 10-game winning streak. But I still think with the loss of Blake Wheeler now, Hedl not coming back, they're going to need to get one or two pieces here. And those are the names that I'm hearing. Those are the names that seem to make the most sense to me. And Wennberg, too, in Seattle. Again, we'll see what happens with the Kraken.
And putting the trade deadline aside, what's the thing that sets the Rangers, like, over the top? I personally, I feel like they need to start closing out teams more. I mean, we've seen a year after year, 6-7 games. Like, they need to win a series in 4 or 5 games to be considered a legitimate contender. I don't know about you, though.
Oh, no, listen, I was a part of that run in 14, and I really think the reason that they didn't dance as well with the Kings as they could is all the games that they played during that run. You know, they had to go 7 with Philly, had to go 7 with Pittsburgh. You know, even though it was 6 games against the Canadians, there were hard fought games, overtime. And then you wonder if you got anything left. And then those 2 overtime losses to start the Stanley Cup final, I think you just killed them. Yeah, you'd like to be able to finish these teams off, but it's hard. I mean, that's why I think winning this conference is going to be so vitally important. You know, do you really want to play Tampa in the first round? Like, I don't think the Lightning are that great of a team. Is that the team you want to draw in the first round? Have to beat Vasilevsky and Kucherov, who's having an amazing season, and Stamkos. I'd rather take on a Detroit, a younger team, inexperienced. We don't know. I mean, Tampa may finish as the 8 seed. Could be Detroit. Maybe Philadelphia drops down there. But I'm with you. I'd like to see this team have a little easier series and be more poised for a longer run. I think that's important. Also, the biggest problem I've always felt with this team is it's too much Trocheck, Panarin, Kreider, Zibanejad. Now you're seeing Lafreniere start to warm up here. Did you see the stat? I did it before the game. What their record is over the last 2 years when Lafreniere scores?
Same.
In 18 straight games, 27-2-1. But it just shows you that when you get some other, get that secondary, tertiary scoring to be able to get Kako, to get Lafreniere scoring, I think that can maybe move the needle more than anything else on who they go out and get, guys. If Kako and Lafreniere start to play better, it's almost like you acquired good young talent. I think Lafreniere's got the better chance than Kako just because of who he plays with to be more of an offensive support. But if they can get Lafreniere and Kako going and still get what they get with the other 4 guys and really get legitimate scoring out of 3 lines, that's what we're talking about. That's the kind of stuff that where Stanley Cups are won.
So it's funny you brought it up. I don't know if you caught wind of this, but last week I have been starting to push a narrative or create a narrative that I believe one day Alexi Lafreniere can be a 100-point player in the NHL. And it got a lot of negative feedback, which I did expect. But anyone who's watched this team play and has watched him play this season, I mean, this guy is creating probably 3 to 5 grade A scoring chances a night, not only for himself, but for his line mates too. And it feels like the guy, and it's so hard to say, like, you need Trocheck and Panarin to finish more, or, you know, guys around him to finish more, but it really feels like they're not when he feeds them. Like, he made one play against the Devils that I posted the clip like five times. He was the F3 on the back check. He separates the man from the puck. He fires the puck around in the breakout, then joins the rush, creates a 2-on-1 with him and Adam Fox. And Foxy shoots it right into the pads of Nico Dawes. No rebound, no goal. But he's been doing that consistently, and I just want an opinion on his ceiling, I guess.
Well, I don't think he'll ever live up to being the first overall pick in the draft. I guess he was compared to Stamkos when he was drafted. I don't know if he'll ever get to that point. But here's where I'll throw my support to you, John. If I were to tell you in 2015 – 2016 that Chris Kreider would score 50 goals, would it be any more outrageous than what you're saying about Lafreniere? Honestly,
I don't think so.
Before Kreider had the 54 goal season, he never had more than 28 goals, you know, and now he's become, you know, what last year was like upper 30s. I mean, he's a guy that I think you can really expect north of 35 goals. You know, that wasn't anything you'd be considering. So, listen, it would be a pretty hefty jump. I mean, this is a guy that's never scored more than 39 points. Yeah. And to go to 100, that's a pretty
– He's 22.
Pretty massive jump. But like I said, you know, when Kreider's coming off a 25-goal season, saying, you know, this guy can double his goal total, that Chris – or could Chris Kreider, by the end of next year, will be the second-highest goal scorer in the history of the Rangers. You wouldn't have seen that coming either. So – I hear what you're saying. Listen, I'm not going to bet on it just because it's a major jump. Just getting 100 points in this league is tough. I mean, you know, outside of McDavid's and the Kucherovs, it's not like that happens all the time. Even Panarin hasn't gotten to 100 yet. He's always banging on the door. He's close. So it's a pretty lofty expectation. But like I said, the Kreider analogy was just as lofty, and look what's happened.
Yeah, I've always said it for years now. The expectations are way too high for these draft picks. Understandably, when you have guys like McDavid, Matthews coming in the league and lighting it up right away. But I completely agree with you, and I actually agree with Johnny's take as well. But going back to a little bit of the broadcasting for a second, I always like to ask behind the scenes. You know, you're always around the team, Johnny too. So I always like to ask a question, even to the former players that come on the podcast. What's your favorite off-air moment, whether, you know, it was in the back end of the garden talking to a player that you can actually tell on this podcast involving the Rangers?
Ooh, that's a real – I wish I was prepared for this. A few, I just got to sift through what's not going to get me in any kind of trouble. Although listen, hockey players are great to deal with. I remember – being in the room when Avery brought his family into the dressing room in Buffalo and seeing John Tortorella's expression. That was fun. no surprise. Sean was a healthy scratch that night. Tortorella, I love John. I don't know how you guys feel about him. Johnny, love I don't him. Know if you've ever had to deal with him.
I never met him.
Covering the Rangers. I think he's an absolute gem. Honestly, and I know, you know, the stop coaching Pat and all that. I never took it personal because I got to know him. I covered his Stanley Cup run in 04. So I knew him. Great, great guy. But he would have just some meltdowns. But he was always very kind to me. But I remember one time he brought me. It was, God, it was like four people. Larry wasn't one of them, but it was like one of the, and it was like four guys. I forget where we were, St. Louis, some morning skate, calls us into the office. And he's like, listen, I just want to tell you, I hate you guys. I hate you. He goes, not you personally, just the whole concept of the media and you asking questions. And I just laughed. And then he laughed like he was so much fun to deal with. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like him because of the whole, you know, that he gets, you know, passionate. And fire. But I think he's a terrific coach. I think what he's doing in Philadelphia is tremendous. But those are some stories of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Another one that I've talked about on the K-Show, without giving a tremendous amount of detail, I got a stomach bug in Calgary back in 2018. And I did the game very, very sick. And I was green, and we had to go to Minnesota right after the game. And I got through the game and ended up being fine. And we fly to Minnesota, and I fell asleep. And I woke up, but the plane was empty. Everybody had already left. So I had to run to get off the plane. And instead of going down to the tarmac, I veered to the right and ended up in the Minneapolis airport, just wandering around, like not knowing where I was.
Left you on the plane though?
Dave had to come get me. Dave saved the day. He came to get me. But I want to say that Quinn did a great job. Usually the buses will just leave you, and we follow the players to the hotel. But they got wind that they couldn't find me, so Quinn held the bus up. So then they find me and they bring me back to the bus, and I got a good night's sleep. I felt much better the next day. It was just like a 24-hour thing I got from my kids before I left. And before we started the press conference, Quinn asked how I was doing, put his arm around me. I thought that was really nice that he did that. Most of these, the relationship that you have between player, coaches, and the media sometimes isn't the greatest, but he was one coach that he actually felt for me. So I thought that was nice. A lot of other people would have just left me there. I would have to fend for my side. I didn't know what I was doing, but that's a quick story. But they're all great guys. They really are. Covering hockey players is so much better than covering any other sport. They're all down to earth, nice people. And coaches, the same thing. Like I said, Tortorella is nice. Tom Rennie was a salt of the earth guy. Elaine Vigneault was fun to deal with as well. So those are a couple of things that kind of popped into my head. I'll probably think of more after, but those are the two that popped into my head quick.
Well, I know we're running a little bit short on time here, but I do have like one or two more if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I didn't want to skip over it. I mean, while we're kind of on the topic of coaches, I think Avery and I have talked a lot about Laviolette feeling like that New York coach, right? Like he just seems like a guy, even though he's not from here, he just understands the people here. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious on your thoughts. If, to me, he's a guy that this is the first time I've like really believed in a coach, not just a team, but the coach. And I'm curious if you have a similar feeling or if there's another guy that you've dealt with maybe where you truly felt it. I mean, we were too young for Torts, I feel like, to really understand.
No, but I really rooted for Laviolette to get the job. I got to know him when he was the Islander head coach. As a matter of fact, I did a Saturday show. We had the Islanders on ESPN radio before we had the Rangers. So when the Islanders made those runs in 02, 03, 04, they made the playoffs 3 straight years under Laviolette. He was the coach, and he was a weekly. I'd have him as every Saturday. Chris Botta was the PR director, and he got me Laviolette every Saturday, which I thought was great. So I got to know him, worked a little on NHL Live when he was between jobs, and got to cover for NHL Live the Stanley Cup Final when Carolina beat Edmonton. So I know what he can do. Now, you said he's not a New York guy, but he is because of those years he spent with the Islanders, and he played a little bit for the Rangers, so he gets the New York thing. But look what he did in Carolina, wins a cup, right away. Philadelphia takes him to the Stanley Cup Final, takes Nashville to the Stanley Cup Final. I mean, how many coaches take 3 different teams to a final? He's won a cup. So I just felt he was suited for this. Now, there's always the shelf life. I mean, obviously, it was a short-term situation in Washington because I think they were older and banged up, so I don't know if anybody was going to have success there. So it seems like all these coaches come with expiration dates, but I felt they gave him a 3-year contract because he had a 3-year window to get it done. And in the first year, he's already got the team competing for a President's Trophy. So I think he's a terrific coach. There's a system. There's a plan in place. He supports his players, but can still be a disciplinarian at the same time. He is a hell of a coach. He really is. And I think the Rangers really hit a home run. I was not on board with the Quinn firing. I thought he deserved a little bit more time. I get what they did with Gallant, but I respect Chris for realizing it wasn't the right fit and making a move. But to me, I'm not just reacting on what they've done so far this year. I'm reacting off of how I felt when they hired him. I think this is a home run. I think this is really going to work.
And I promise this is my last one before I share a little story and let you go. I don't want to drag your time here too long, but you were on the glass for the outdoor game. I mean, probably the best perspective out of everybody. I was in the press box. Avery was in the seats. But can you talk about – I mean, that's got to be the coolest fucking thing of all time where you were sitting for that game.
Listen, I've been very fortunate. I've worked ice level for all 5 of their outdoor games going back to Philadelphia in 2012. It's always been great. This was the best ever. Because it's a football stadium. So it kind of resembles, at least symmetrically, an NHL arena. I thought the ice was terrific. But the baseball stadium just had too much wide open space. You felt way disconnected with the crowd. And, obviously, Citizens Bank, there was a partial Flyer crowd. The Yankee stuff, I thought it was great. But something hit different about this one that really, not just because the way the game ended and how exciting the game was, just how electric the crowd was, way more people than you would get at a baseball ballpark. It was just really, it was a just incredible experience. I was very fortunate. I was there for the game winning goal. I was there for Lindgren's getting his face smashed into the ice. It was right in front of me. So I felt like a lot of the action was right there where I was, where Igor was defending the net twice. And then they flipped for overtime. So I was there, and I knew the Panarin goal was going to count because I saw that the Islanders had knocked it off the netting. So the fallacy of the predetermined outcome, you knew that that puck was going to go in had it not been knocked off the mooring. So felt like we were on top of the play. That was a really special day. That was by far the best of the five.
Unbelievable. It seriously was. I mean, me and Avery still, like, you know, we're talking about it being probably top three sporting event of our life. You know, it's up there to me with even like the Panarin overtime goal, you know, all that stuff. But I just, you know, before we let you go, Avery, I don't know if you had one, do you have one more thing or anything?
It's just from Cody. So we have a third member of this podcast. Cody couldn't make it.
He's a corporate guy.
Yeah. He's a corporate guy. It's actually off topic completely of the Rangers. It's a Yankee question. Him and I are both Yankee fans, but he wanted to know, do you think given the Yankees' latest offseason additions, they are back to being one piece, or do they still have ways to go? And what have you heard on that one piece being Snell or Cease after Curry's latest comments?
It doesn't feel like that it's going to happen with Snell, but you never know. I guess I don't know if they need another piece. It just seems like to me the offense always comes up short in the postseason. That, you know, we get all this pitching, but yet it's not the pitching that hurts them in the postseason. It's not being able to get that big hit. But it's hard to win now. You know, you were talking about 94 with the Rangers. It's hard to win. It's not the sport where the Rangers, the Yankees won four championships in 5 years. Not that sport anymore. They're clearly good enough to go out there and win the division. I think they're better than the Blue Jays. I think they're better than the Rays. The Orioles are interesting, but the Yankees have way more experience. But I don't know what they'll do. You know, they seem to shy away from these Boris clients, and Snell never seems to pitch well after winning a Cy Young. So it doesn't feel like anything else is going to be happening, but we'll have to wait and see. Maybe something at the deadline for sure, especially if they're struggling.
So Alan Hahn wanted me to mention the post-game shows at Pitchers at the Marriott after Islander games.
The champion. I always known it as Champions.
I don't know. He said Pitchers then at the Marriott. But
we did that all the time because, like I said, we had the Islanders early on, and it was during the Rick DiPietro time, and we would we'd cover the game, and we'd do shows. They had a nice little broadcast booth there, and Alan would come by because Alan covered the Islanders. Got to know John Weidman, who did the play-by-play with Chris King for the Islanders. That was a lot of fun. That was a good time. I missed the Coliseum, but I missed going out there. That was always good food and a lot of fun and hanging out with Alan. But I knew it as Champions. I don't know if they changed it to Pitchers or it was Pitchers back in the day, but it was Champions of the Marriott right across the parking lot from the Coliseum. And it'd always be like, you'd be hanging out there and Billy Smith would be playing pool. It was weird. Like all the old Islanders were there. It was a really, really cool vibe there. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, Alan begged me to bring that one up. But
Ricky Pietro was a very bad guy back then. I'd always try to, he'd be there eating dinner. I'd ask him to come. He would never come on the show. He's a nice guy now, but when he played, he was very unapproachable.
He was probably cocky from all the money he was
getting. Very, very cocky.
But I actually haven't said this to you in person. I kind of wanted to save it for the recording because it is a big compliment to you. When I was on the train heading to Yankee Stadium for the Rangers outdoor games, I was, I think, a senior or junior in high school. I was standing next to you on the subway and I saw your credential, but I didn't know what you had looked like because I'd only heard you on the radio my whole life. And my dad, you know, he would drive me to practice to Brooklyn, to New Jersey every day. And he'd have the Michael Kay show on in the car. That's what we listened to Rangers radio on the way home. So I saw your credential and I introduced myself and you talked to me for probably 30 minutes.
Oh, really?
I was like, no, I was like a 17-year-old kid. To me, it, like, you know, I didn't even know I wanted to be in the industry. And no, I just wanted to thank you in the recording publicly to just say, like, you know, you're one of those guys where you'll take the time to talk to somebody if you're not like Avery and just say, hey, big fan.
No, I remember that because I didn't remember it was you, but I do remember doing that because the Super Bowl was in New York. And usually we go, we would travel at the time, we traveled to the different city where the Super Bowl was, but it was in New York. And they set up, I think, a radio row at the Javits Center or someplace. But we got the idea we were going to do it at Bryant Park. And we did the shows from Bryant Park. And for the Islander game was during the week. I want to say it was a Wednesday, maybe,
of
Super Bowl week. So I had to take the subway to Yankee Stadium to do it. So I do remember that. That was a lot of fun. That was so cold. Both those days were so, freezing, so cold.
Brutal. This last game wasn't bad at all.
No, it was cold, but it wasn't bad. City Field was really bad, too, against the Sabres. Yeah. I remember that being very cold. But Citizens Bank and the one in MetLife, it wasn't too bad.
I will say, before you go, Johnny did say I was a huge fan. I mean, there literally are times where if I don't like the national broadcast who's calling the game, I will sync up your audio to my television.
Well, I appreciate that. It's hard to do. The effort that counts. So thanks, man. That's cool.
Yeah. I told my dad we were having you on. And he said, you got to tell him at the time on the subway. So,
well, tell him I said hello. And he's he did a great job with you.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Don. So thank you for your time. I know we went a little bit over, but we really appreciate it. You're the best. And see you Wednesday night when Rempe drops the gloves about 30 seconds in.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Don.
Just wanted to thank Don LaGreca one more time for hopping on the show with us. It was so cool to talk to him. We really appreciate everyone tuning into today's episode. We don't really have much else to talk about. It's just me right now, kind of wrapping everything up. We're going to come back with an episode next week. Rangers play on Wednesday and on Saturday. Wednesday, they're home against Columbus. Saturday, they're in Toronto. So the three of us should be recording on Sunday. We'll have that episode posted on Monday morning. But hope you guys all enjoyed the interview with Don. Hope you enjoyed the episode today. We love you. We'll talk to you soon. And LFGR.